format and everything is right there for you.
From Boulder, Colorado, we've been speaking with author, psychologist, and global witness Carolyn Baker. You can grab any of Carolyn's tools, as she's talked about, at carolynbaker.net. And as always, I will add a few links in my weekly show blog at ecoshock.org as well. Carolyn, you know, talking with you seems like a therapy session in itself. Thank you for helping us on Radio EcoShock.
You're very welcome, Alex. Thank you for having me.
I'm Alex Smith. We are out of time. During the climate emergency, please tune in to Radio EcoShock. Find more links and comments in my weekly show blog at ecoshock.org. I'm Alex Smith. Thank you for listening and caring about our world.
You are tuned to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Tune in to KBOO every fourth Friday of the month at 8 p.m. for Squirrel Snow, the show where we broadcast galactic awareness, animal awareness, where we have fascinating conversations with movers and shakers in the fields of galactic awareness and animal awareness, and we play music that can raise our frequency of consciousness. Yeah, that is Squirrel Snow every fourth Friday of the month at 8 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Spark Plug. Stunning. New sounds every other Wednesday, 3 a.m. to 5:30 a.m. Join us and get connected.
Hi, I'm Cory Doctorow, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
One, two, three, four.
Welcome to Beyond Your Front Door, your adventure guide to the Central Oregon coast. I'm your host, Dina Pavlis. I'm pleased to be in the studio today with Anna Moore. Anna is known as the Mushroom Lady of Florence, Oregon. Anna will talk about safely harvesting mushrooms and how to use them once you bring them home. Anna, welcome to the show.
I'm happy to be here.
Can you share a bit about your background?
I retired in 2005 from UC Berkeley. I was doing environment, health, and safety, but my background on mushrooms is something a little bit different because that was the mid-80s, I think, when I started to get interested in fungi and have been studying ever since.
Well, I just learned something already on this show. It's fungi and not fungi. Okay, so I've been pronouncing it wrong for, I guess, my entire life.
Oh, I think any way you pronounce it is fine. Some people just say fun guys.
Okay, oh, I love that. That's great. Fun guys. Well, is there a certain or was there a certain mushrooming experience that got you hooked on fungi, or how did that happen?
Well, back in the mid-80s, I was wandering around the Sierras about 10,000 feet, and it had happened to be an unusually wet and early fall for California. And there were huge mushrooms everywhere I looked. I couldn't even take a step without stepping on something. And I thought, I don't know a single thing about this. I could be passing gold. So it got me really excited, and I started learning right after that and joined clubs and started me on my journey.
I noticed your earrings today are, what type of mushroom is that?
Those are golden chanterelles.
I love that. They're beautiful, too. How fun. Well, I think before we get into talking about harvesting mushrooms, it's important to talk about safety. And I was wondering, could you share about the risks associated with mushroom hunting, especially for beginners?
Well, the biggest risk, of course, is getting lost in the woods because you're walking around in circles looking down. And you get excited about what you're finding, and all of a sudden you look up and you have no idea where in the world you are. And you can go 100 yards off of the path, especially like the Silk Coast Lake Trail, just a little bit off that trail, and you can't find it again.
Wow. You know, it's so interesting to hear that answer because, of course, I'm thinking safety, like not poisoning yourself, but it never even occurred to me that, of course, you're looking down the whole time and it would be extremely easy to get disoriented or lost off of a trail.
I think a good idea would be to have a dog that you train to go to the car.
Yeah, that actually happened with me one time down at Tackenich. The sign was knocked over, the trail sign, and somebody had propped it back up, and it looked like the trail went one way. And so we went the way that we thought we were supposed to go and soon realized we were off trail, but we kept going. And then all of a sudden realized we couldn't find our way back to the trail. Everything had closed up, and we had our dog, and we said, go load up, and our dog took us right back the way
Absolutely.
We had come.
They're the best.
That's a great idea. And do you think having like a GPS on your phone could be helpful, or a map system?
Yeah, and I think there's apps like Map My Walk or something so you can backtrack.
Ooh, that's a great idea.
One of the other dangers is if you hurt yourself, be sure you know how you're going to be able to get out. It's always recommended that you let somebody know where you're going and what time you think you'll be home. But that doesn't always work if you're like me. I just take off and I never know where I'm going.
Right, right. And that's really good advice for anybody going out in any kind of wilderness experience, to make sure people know where you are or that you're going to be somewhere where your phone works, assuming you don't hurt yourself to the point that you can't use your phone or that your phone has fallen away from you on a fall.
Yes, but the phone works at Silk Coast, but it doesn't work at Tackenich.
Yeah. You know, my friends and I, a few of us have our phones set so we can see where we are. I think it's the Find My Friends app on the iPhone, at least. We've used that before when we've needed to locate somebody.
Yeah, maybe you can friend your car so it's fine. Let your phone find your car.
Yeah, there you go. I love that.
One of the other things I would carry for safety is a walking stick. I always take a stick because if I do hurt my ankle, I can limp back.
That's a great idea.
I mean, you can find a stick on the trail, but around here they're half rotten most of the time. And then if an animal approaches you that scares you, you've got a little distance between you. You can use your stick for a lot of things, and especially on the uneven ground, to keep you from getting hurt. So I recommend a walking stick.
Yeah, that's a really good advice as well. Anything else that we should think about?
Water. You can go without food, but you need the water.
Yeah, that's true. And I know when I get out on the dunes sometimes on a hike, I think I'm just going to go for a short hike and I go a lot longer. And I would think with mushroom hunting, it could be the same thing, that all of a sudden you're just following the mushrooms and you've gone a lot farther than you realize.
Yes, they're really good at luring you into the deep woods.
Yeah. So being prepared, I agree, with water would be good. Before we jump in to talking more about mushrooms, what is the best time of year to mushroom hunt here on the coast?
Well, our season really is the fall. Once it starts raining, and sometimes it starts in September and sometimes it's not until October, but about 10 days after a really, really good rain, 2, 3, 4 inches, then beautiful things start to pop up. Usually by mid-September, and it might last all the way through December, but once it starts to get cold, things start disappearing. There are some winter mushrooms. There's a winter chanterelle that you can get all the way until the spring. And then also chanterelles, you can find them almost most of the year, because after the spring rains, the summer chanterelles start up. But they're harder to find, but they're also drier, which means that they're not all soggy and wet, which is nice.
Yeah, that's nice. We have a number of different ecosystems here on the coast, forests, dunes, estuaries. Are some areas better for mushroom hunting than others?
Well, some of the best edibles have a relationship with trees. It's called mycorrhizal. So you need to learn your trees, and you look for a specific tree. Like with the King Bolets, really you're looking at spruce. And in the dunes, there are these spruce islands where you see a few pines and one big spruce out in the middle of the sand. Go towards that area. And the most amazing thing you will see in the fall is in the middle of just sand, nothing but sand, a 10-pound King Bolet will come up.
Wow.
And you wonder, how can it possibly, you know, get enough nourishment to do that in the sand? But it's the tree producing the food for the fungi to fruit and send out its fruiting body, which is the mushroom.
So interesting. Okay. I'll keep an eye out for that when I'm hiking.
You'll see them out in the dunes. You'll be surprised.
If I'm a beginner, are there certain mushrooms that are the best to start with?
Well, I always recommend for beginners that they just learn one or two mushrooms at a time. Forget all the other things that you see. Don't pick up a bunch of things. Just, you know, learn what the choice edibles are, because if you're hunting for eating, why do you want ones that aren't very good? Choice edibles. And around here, that's, of course, the chanterelle, the golden chanterelle. And there are four species of chanterelles that we have here. And chanterelles have two lookalikes. Neither of them are deadly poisonous, but they could make your stomach a little sick. And you need to learn the lookalikes, too. So you learn the mushroom that you want to find. And I would say chanterelle is a great one to start with. And then the King Malik, because we have so many of them here in the fall. And they're very distinctive and have distinctive characteristics. The commercial one, of course, is the Matsutake. And an amazing number of people around, locals, say, I don't like that mushroom. And it's because of the way you cook it.
Oh.
It needs to be processed a little differently. And oysters, usually you get them in the spring and in the fall, maybe two or three fruitings a year. If you like oysters, they would be growing on a tree or a fallen dead limb of an alder, something like that. But there are lookalikes. And yes, you need to learn the mushroom and the lookalike, and you need to be 100% sure of what you have before you eat it. And that means having a friend who knows, and you can take your finds to and say, would you look over these and be sure that these are what I think they are.
Are there groups or clubs that people can join where they might be able to go out with other people or have a resource to bring their mushrooms, you know, for to look over?
Well, there's no club here in Florence, but Eugene has CMS, the Cascade Mycological Society. North of us, there's LCMS, the Lincoln City Mushroom Society. Portland has a club, OMS, I think, Oregon Mushroom Society. And Brookings has a really nice club.
Oh.
So it depends kind of on where you are, but you might have to drive a ways, but it's worth it to go on a club foray, to have them take you out, because that's the way you start learning.
Yeah, that sounds great. My biggest fear, and the reason I don't mushroom hunt, is I'm so afraid of getting the wrong mushroom and getting sick.
People who know me usually call me and say, I found this, and they send me a picture, and I tell them, the picture's not good enough. I have to see the underside of the mushroom, too.
Right.
And pictures don't always tell the whole story. So it's really good to have someone that you trust that you can go to and have them look at your mushrooms.
My friend Linda had some mushrooms growing in her front yard. I don't know if it was last year or the year before, and she sent you a photo, and you looked at the photos and were able to tell her that they not only were they edible, but they were probably going to be quite good. And so that was really fun.
Yeah, I'll bet it was a prince.
It might be. It was growing, I don't know if it was in a pot that it was growing in or where it was growing in her yard, but it was pretty, we were all pretty excited when we got your email back.
Yeah. They come up in the landscapings, but again, you need to know, just focus on a few, just a couple of good ones until you really, really learn that very well.
Right.
And then expand your knowledge, because there's thousands of different species around.
That's really great advice. So you talked a little bit about harvesting mushrooms yourself. Do you sell those mushrooms ever, or is it only for your personal use?
Well, I have done both. If I am selling, then I get a commercial permit. And I guess this is a good time to talk about permits, because here with the Siuslaw National Forest, they have a great policy. You don't have to have a permit for personal use, and that's up to a gallon per person per day. Which sounds like a lot, but it's not a lot if you're finding King Baliks and one of them weighs 7 to 10 pounds.
That's right.
That's your gallon right there, right? And you see 10 others and you want them. So I usually get a commercial permit just so I can pick. When they come out, they tend to come out all at once. So, and I could sell them, and a couple of times I have, but mostly I don't. I make powders, and I do occasionally sell the powders to people who want them. But I give a lot of mushrooms to friends.
Interesting. So this might be a good time to ask about your powders and how do you use your mushrooms?
One of the best flavorful mushrooms is the King Balit, and that's, Italians call it porcini. And it dries very well. You make thin slices and dehydrate it. But then when you rehydrate it, the texture is not so good. So if you grind it up in a coffee grinder and you take the powder and you stir it into anything you're cooking, then you have the flavor. And you have a tremendous, because one mushroom is about 90% water. So when you dry a mushroom down, it becomes a tiny little bit instead of a great big mushroom.
Interesting.
So all that flavor is concentrated.
Wow.
And I sprinkle the powder on anything I'm roasting, like roasting vegetables in the oven. And that's just wonderful on Brussels sprouts and onions and various things you might want to roast.
That's such a great idea. I have a dehydrator that I just got, and so I might try that with some king boletes this year. They're the only mushroom that I usually pick because I know for sure what I'm picking.
Well, there are a lot of different boletes. There's the Lexinum, which has the sponge on the under the cap like a bolete, but I don't recommend people eat the Lexinum. Some people do, but it has some problems. I have here some dried king boletes.
Ooh, yes.
What they look like once they're dried. And then ground up, there's the powder.
Wow. I'm going to get photos of these, and we'll add them to my social media pages when we air this interview so people can see what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Wow. Look at the difference. That's so amazing. Yeah. I never thought about drying them and grinding them up and then sprinkling it on as a flavor. It's a great idea.
Right. And are stirring it into your soup or your stew. It doesn't take very much to add a lot of flavor. You don't need a bouillon cube. You just use a teaspoon of bolete powder.
Super smart. Well, do you have any tips? We're talking now about dehydrating them and grinding them up into powders. Are there good ways for storing and preserving mushrooms other than what we've just talked about? Like if I bring home mushrooms and I want to eat them fresh, do I need to cook them right away or?
It depends on the mushroom, but they will store, keep in a, I would say, make sure you put it in a paper bag. If you have it in plastic, that's death. They will rot right away. They need to breathe.
Oh.
So put them in a paper bag. Put them in your refrigerator. Cleaned. It's better to start with them cleaned. Otherwise, the dirt's going to stick on them as they dry up a little bit. And some mushrooms dehydrate very nicely just sitting in your refrigerator, and then you'll have a dehydrated mushroom ready to throw into a soup pot.
Okay, that's great. That's good to know. Is the king bolete your favorite mushroom, or do you have a favorite mushroom you like to eat?
Well, the king bolete is one of the more beautiful mushrooms to see in the woods because it's called the penny button. And if you tap it on the cap, the top of the cap, it will sound like a fresh loaf of bread.
Wow.
So I love finding those because there's like a big smile. But then there are more exciting things like black trumpets, which we don't have here, but I go to California for those. And they're almost impossible to find because they're little black circles in the ground.
Wow.
Really hard to find. Same thing with morels up in the Cascades. You know, you search, unless you're in a burn, you search very hard in a natural environment to find a morel because it looks like a little pine cone.
Oh, interesting.
But I guess probably my favorite mushroom would be the candy cap. And again, it's not here on the coast, but it is in the coastal range. I have found it.
Well, that's good to know.
It's not as potent here in Oregon as it is in California along the coast. Mendocino is a great mushroom area for collecting.
Wow. That's good to know for people who might want to take a trip.
But the interesting thing about the candy cap mushroom is when you dry it, it smells like maple syrup.
Ooh.
And it works in a sweet or savory dish. And anything you put it in, it brightens the dish up. So I actually make candy, little chocolates with candy cap syrup in it.
Wow.
And they just have an incredible flavor.
Yum. That sounds actually really good. You know, I never know what to do with my mushrooms other than I just kind of saute them up in butter and olive oil. Do you have any cooking suggestions for people?
Well, sauteing in a mixture of butter and olive oil or one or the other is always good to get to know the taste of the mushroom. Don't mix three or four different kinds of mushrooms together for two reasons. One, you won't know the flavor of the specific mushroom. And two, if you get sick, you don't know which one made you sick.
That's true.
And sometimes even an edible like a lobster mushroom that we have around here can make some people sick.
Yeah, I've heard suggestions that when you first eat a mushroom, you should always taste just a small amount. Is that true?
You should eat a small amount and keep a specimen in case you get really sick that you can show somebody, this is what I ate.
Oh, that's a good idea.
But again, if you're not 100% sure, don't eat it.
Yeah, really good advice. Are there benefits to eating harvested mushrooms versus store-bought mushrooms?
Well, with the store-bought mushroom, unless you know the grower, where it came from, you don't know what medium it was grown in. We're lucky to have our wonderful rainforest mushrooms locally here, and Bob comes to our farmer's market, and I trust what he cultivates and sells. So that's one way to get, you know, ones that don't grow here, because the shiitake and the lion's mane, you're not going to find in the woods, but they're really good for you. But basically, I don't buy store mushrooms.
Okay, well, of course you don't. I do, because I'm afraid to hunt my own mushrooms. But I love Bob's mushrooms. I didn't realize that was his first name, Bob.
Yeah.
And that's at the Florence Farmers Market every Tuesday from, is it 3 to 5 or 3 to 6?
3 to 6.
3 to 6.
He's at the Yahatz Market and he's at the Eugene Market.
Okay, great. Yeah, his mushrooms are great. And I love those lion's mane.
Yeah.
I've gotten them from him before.
And they have really good medicinal properties.
Yeah, and he's really great about talking to you about how to use them and cook them and give you good suggestions.
Anything that he grows, I would say, start there. That's a good place to learn the oyster. You can get different kinds of oysters from him. I always get maitake. That's my favorite.
Yeah, they're so good from him. I agree.
Yeah.
If I wanted to go mushroom hunting, let's say I was going to go with you, what supplies would you tell me to bring?
Water, a bag, and I brought in one of my bags that I use in the woods.
Ooh.
And this is plastic bags crocheted into a bag.
We'll get a photo of this as well.
With a long strap, and there's a woman in Walport who crochets these.
Oh, great.
Ruth. And see, the bag goes around my neck so my hands are free.
Oh,
and
I love that.
The spores can drop out through the bag, which is a good thing for trailing your spores through the woods. And it doesn't matter if they're wet because it's a plastic bag.
And you know, it doesn't look like plastic. It's so beautiful. We'll get a picture of this here, and it's Ruth in Waldport makes these. Is there a place that she sells them?
I think she's at the Waldport Market. She used to come to the Yahatz Market, but I haven't seen her in a while.
Okay, the Waldport Market.
Yeah.
So that's good to know. And what about a knife? I thought I read one time that you're supposed to cut a mushroom a certain way so that it grows back. Is that all true, or is that myth?
That is such a big controversy, whether you pluck or cut.
Okay.
I'm more of a plucker than a cutter.
Okay.
But you still need the knife, because once you pull the mushroom up, you're going to want to clean it and put it in your bag. Because if you put it in your bag dirty, all the mushrooms are going to get dirt in their gills or in whatever, and then you will have to clean them more. So you need a good bag to collect in, preferably something you can keep your hands free. Sometimes if you've got a mushroom permit and you're going to collect a lot, you might need a backpack. And a knife is always useful for lots of reasons. Matsutake, you practically have to dig out their like little mushrumps. Mushrump is when the mushroom is start to push up the dirt and you see the dirt is cracked, and then you dig through the dirt and you find the mushroom and pull it out. With the matsutake, you want to rock it out.
Oh.
Move it back and forth a little bit until it comes out clean.
Now, you mentioned people around here not liking the matsutakes, and I'm one of them. I thought it tasted like pine sap when I tasted it. And so my question is, how should you prepare them?
Well, you know, most of the commercial ones collected here are sent to Japan because they love that mushroom. And they love from our dunes are one of the best matsutakes in the world. So it really needs an Asian-type preparation. They have very special ways of preparing them. And they might spend $250 for one mushroom.
Wow.
And so you know they're going to prepare it very carefully. They're
right.
Certainly not going to slice it up and fry it in butter.
Right, right. Which, by the way, I didn't think tasted very good.
No. The beauty is in the smell of the matsutake. So if you cook it, you're going to drive the volatile oils off and you won't smell it.
Okay.
So, yeah, they're cooked very lightly, which is not true for most mushrooms. You're going to want to cook them quite well because there's chitin in the cell walls of mushrooms, and we can't digest chitin.
Oh, interesting.
Most of us can't. There's a few people with a stomach that can digest anything. But so that's what gives you a little gastric upset, is if you eat a mushroom raw, then you're just having trouble breaking it down.
Okay, interesting. So, Anna, one of my favorite parts of this show is asking people to share a favorite memory or experience. And I was wondering if you have an experience related to mushroom hunting that you'd like to share.
you know, we're always in a hurry to get the mushroom season started, but it's not going to start until it gets wet. The moisture is everything. If a mushroom is 90% water, it can't possibly fruit until the conditions are right. And the tree will feed the mushroom mycelium enough sugar that it can put up a great big thing like a 10-pound king bolete, which is amazing, that these little fine filaments, little fine threads that are almost invisible under the ground can put up a huge mushroom. But when you see the first king bolete, you know the season is on. So when I see that, I get really excited because it's like, okay, game on.
Yeah.
It's time to start walking. And I might walk up to 14 miles a day sometimes.
Wow. You know, that's exciting. I never thought about how mushrooms grow and what you just said about how something so small can produce something so large. I'm always excited when I see the king bolets as well, just because they're so huge. But now I'm going to think about it in a whole different way. So thank you. Right.
Well, this mycorrhizal relationship, and that's not true for every fungus, but it's true for most of our good edibles around here. During the whole year, the mushroom mycelium that's in the ground is feeding the tree minerals and moisture when the tree needs it, when it's really dry. And so then, you know, it's payback time, and then they get sugar when they need it.
That's so great. I love knowing that.
One more thing about that mycorrhizal relationship. The trees are connected. You know, the trees have roots, and then they have rootlets, and then the rootlets have root hairs. And the root hairs, the mushroom mycelium is tiny. It wraps around those. So the trees in the forest are connected together, and they can actually talk to each other through this network.
Wow.
So it's called the wood, we call it the wood wide network.
I love it.
Or the wood wide web.
The wood wide web. I love that. Yeah. That's great. That's so fascinating. Thank you so much for that information. Well, if you tuned in late, you've been listening to Beyond Your Front Door, produced for the Pacifica Radio Network in the studios of KXCR in beautiful downtown Florence, Oregon. And I've been speaking with the Mushroom Lady of Florence, Oregon, Anna Moore, and we've been talking about harvesting and using mushrooms here along the coast. Anna's been sharing tips about safely harvesting mushrooms and how to use them once you bring them home. If you missed any portion of the show, you can find the entire show on SoundCloud.com. Just search for Beyond Your Front Door, Oregon, and look for the wave. One mushroom that I am not so afraid to hunt for, because nothing else seems to look like it, are the lobster mushrooms. And I was wondering if you wanted to share a bit about those.
Well, the lobster is really interesting because it's actually a Russula brevipes, which is a little white mushroom with gills that doesn't taste very good. You could eat it, but it doesn't taste very good. When it's still underground, before it breaks the ground, it gets parasitized by a hypomyces, which is another fungus. It will transform that white, insipid little mushroom into a bright orange mushroom with no gills. The gills disappear. It has a firmer texture, and it has a pretty good taste. A lot of people like them. And it's beautiful because every single lobster looks a little bit different since it's one mushroom getting transformed into another. It always takes different shapes, and some of them can be quite large or they can be tiny. But you want to get them when you squeeze them, they're still firm.
Okay.
If you squeeze them and they crumble, then it's old.
That's good to know. And what time of year are they out?
They start in the summer.
Great.
And then they
oh.
keep going. Once it gets really, really wet, the Russia brevipes can be what it wants to be, its own mushroom, because it isn't struggling to have enough water to come up.
Oh, interesting.
So you get less lobsters and more russulas.
I actually like the taste of lobsters.
A really good way to prepare them is to slice them up and roast them in the oven with a little oil and Ooh. Little seasonings, and you get lobster chips.
Yum. Oh, that's a great idea. I love that. I wonder how they do in the air fryer, if they're too moist to do in the air fryer. I'll have to try that.
It's always worth trying.
Yeah. Thank you. Anna, we are just about out of time. Is there anything else that you would like to share before we wrap up?
I want you to smell this.
Oh, my gosh. I wish we had smell on the radio.
This is the candy cap.
Oh, my gosh. That is fabulous. These are dried candy caps. She's given me a jar. We'll get a photo of those as well.
And you put one mushroom.
Oh, the whole studio smells fabulous right now.
One mushroom in your car will keep your car smelling
oh
sweet
gosh.
Like that for years.
Wow. Those are amazing.
They are.
They smell so good. Okay, so everybody should try to find out how to smell candy caps now. Again, I wish we had smell radio
Smell-o-vision.
Or something. Smell-o-vision on the radio. That's great. Well, Anna, thank you so much for taking time to be here today. It's been an interesting show and I appreciate it.
Well, it's always good to talk about mushrooms. I could talk forever.
Listeners who use information from this program to venture outdoors do so at their own risk. Outdoor activities may be hazardous and must be carefully evaluated for each listener based on that person's circumstances. KXCR and the individuals involved in this program, Pacifica Radio, or any station airing this program do not assume any liability from the use of any information presented. By using this information to enjoy your own coastal adventures, you assume all potential risks and agree to hold Pacifica Radio, KXCR, its affiliates, any station airing this program, and the presenters harmless from any resulting liability. Missed a show recently? You can find all of our shows on SoundCloud.com. Just search for Beyond Your Front Door, Oregon, and look for The Wave. Thanks to Pacifica Radio member stations KBOO, KCEI, PNW Radio, and KXCR for airing Beyond Your Front Door. And thanks to Oregon-based Jumpin' the Rails for performing the theme song, Smith Chapel, used on this show. And thanks again to all of you for tuning in. I hope you have a great week and get some time beyond your front door.
La ville en fête et en délire, suffoquant sous le soleil et sous la joie. Et j'entends dans la musique les cris, les rires qui éclatent et rebondissent autour de moi. Et perdu parmi ces gens qui me bousculent, étourdi, désemparé, je reste là. Quand soudain je me retourne, il se recule. Et la foule vient me jeter entre ses bras.
Listen to KBOO, KBOO, Community Radio 90.7 here in Portland.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The following program is a rebroadcast. For all of KBOO's archived audio, please visit our website at kboo.fm.